Hello, this is Scott Weinberg, and welcome back to another patron episode of Science vs. Fiction. The Doc and I are going to be discussing something we haven't covered before, and I'll let Steven explain what it is. Hi, Steve.
Hey. So we are going to be doing a Star Trek The Next Generation episode, and it's called Conspiracy. It's episode 24 of season one, and I'm not going to say anything more about it because we're about to talk about it for 45 minutes, so...
Right. We are going to go back to Firefly very soon, but Steven wanted to mix it up a bit, and I said, that's a good idea. What do you want to do? And he said, TNG. And I said, yeah, let's go to Twitter and take a poll. But all right, we're going to hit record on this. Going to be about a 45-minute run here. So
we are both watching on Netflix, which has the entire run. And so if you want to play along, I should probably theoretically time out the same as the DVDs, but you never really know. So we are paused at 000 on Netflix, and when Scott gives the cue, we're going to go ahead and play.
Okay, well, you can listen along with or without the episode, but here we go. 3, 2, 1, unpause. Now, Steven, why do you think, when I went out onto Twitter and asked people to name their favorite episode for season one, we got a handful of good votes, and we'll get to those episodes later, but why do you think this was number one?
I mean, I think probably because a lot of your followers are horror people, because that's what you're known for, and this is like a horror episode of The Next Generation. This episode scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. I saw this, you know, when it originally aired. I was, what, 13 or something like that? 12, 11, something? And yeah, the climax of this thing genuinely freaked me out, so...
Give our listeners just a bit of a history between you and TNG.
Oh, I mean, you know, my older brother and I were fans of the original series going back as long as I can basically remember. I remember having like novelizations of it, you know, and back then you couldn't just go buy the DVDs. So like we would have to watch it when it happened to be on television, which was, you know, in syndication or whatever. But we had several of the James Blish Star Trek books, and I remember having recorded at least one episode on cassette tape, just the audio. We would just sit there and listen to the audio for this episode without actually even being able to watch it. So we were fans of the original Star Trek, and so when we found out there was a new Star Trek coming on, we were both very, very excited. Point of science. They do this in every sci-fi thing. They do it all the time in Star Wars to the point where it's almost a cliche. They don't do it quite as much in Star Trek, but they're doing it right here where they describe an entire planet as having one, like this is the beach world essentially is where they're going to, is they're going to the ocean to on a, you know,
ocean planet,
whatever, the ocean planet. It's like
Star Wars does that a lot too.
Yeah.
You're right.
And so, you know, scientifically that's, you know, when you think about the diversity of,
yo, how cool is Picard's bed? Look at that. You get to look up and watch space flying by.
It looks like a futon. It doesn't look comfortable at all. It's got like this
space pillow
under it.
I mean, but look, you can just look straight up and see the stars going by.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool. But again, look at that pillow that he has to lay down on.
And that weird plastic fern he's sleeping behind. Yeah. I don't understand that. I just kind of love that skylight, the starlight.
Yeah. Point of science, most people named Jean-Luc Picard
are
don't
French.
Have British accents.
Yep. But, that's not science. How old is Patrick Stewart right here?
Apparently younger than Will Wheaton is now, from what I've read.
That's the fun thing about the wonderful Patrick Stewart is that when I first started watching TNG, and I was not a big Star Trek aficionado, but I jumped into Next Generation with both feet, and by the time I got to college, Next Generation was on like our local Fox network at 7 and 11 every day, and I slowly got at least half of the fraternity house to be like 7 and 11 would be up in my room watching this. Me and like 15 other guys.
Yeah.
I got a lot of bro dudes into Next Generation in my fraternity house. It was kind of fun, and it was a great ritual for a couple of years.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but Jean-Luc, Patrick Stewart, as we're seeing him right now, is younger than you are.
Yes.
Currently.
Yes.
By just a hair.
But he just carries himself with, like, no matter how old you are, it's not a physical thing, but no matter how old you are, Jean-Luc Picard feels slightly older than you because he's just so authoritative and
well, he's
and
one of those
believable.
People that just doesn't, you know, like I feel I said this about John Malkovich a while ago. I was like, I feel like John Malkovich has looked like he's been 60 years old for the last like 40 years. Like yeah. He just doesn't
change. Does your mom love Patrick Stewart? Because mine does.
Oh, no, man, my mom doesn't like things that aren't real.
Oh, okay.
So, like, she doesn't like science fiction or horror or anything that, like, couldn't really happen is not her bag. So uh-huh. we tried getting her into Star Trek, but it never really worked out. Did they redo this for the because I know they redid some of the effects like this for the original series when they
I do like how they overlay these the kind of dynamic stars up against the flat
stars.
Well,
as I'm seeing that, like, here's the thing, right? So stars are incredibly far apart from one another. If you were able to see, so that's what we call parallax. So like if you open one eye, if you close one eye and then switch back and forth and like hold up a finger, you can see your finger kind of moving back and forth, right? Because your left eye and your right eye have different perspectives, you know, against the background. So that's called parallax. And we can actually measure that for some of the closest stars, but it's on the order of like, you know, fractions of a degree.
No, and it goes back to the cool bed that I was looking at. The stars that are flying by his little skylight there are like literally
they're going
hitting
so
the glass.
Fast. Right. Well, that's the thing, right? Is it like and given, you know, given how fast the stars are going past when anytime they show them going in warp or whatever, they would be able to be across the entire galaxy in like a couple of minutes,
right.
Which is clearly not what's actually happened. So like if you could actually see the stars moving that fast where you could see them flying past your window.
Right. Like right now you're looking at the ones on the left of the ship and they're like, and it looks good. I get why you would do it for a visual scope, but
it doesn't make any sense,
like,
especially because if you were going fast enough to see those things going by you that way, they would be big. Like you would have to actually fly close to the star and you couldn't.
Right.
So here's another interesting thing. So they explain this right here, but the planet they're going to is called Ditalix B. Now, you know, who knows how they are, you know, would name planets in the future. But the way we name planets right now are we name them after the star that they're around, which most of them only have numbered designations. They're not actually names, although, you know, obviously the brightest stars like Rigel and Sirius and stuff like that, we can, you know, they have names because they've had names for hundreds of years, thousands of years. But most stars are just like, you know, HD226868 based on a catalog number because there's so many stars in the sky. Anyway,
I assume
and then every time we discover a planet around a star, like the first one gets called Planet A and the next one B and the next one C. Now, that's apparently not the naming convention that they're using here because apparently these are a series of planets owned by the Ditalix Corporation or something. And this was the second one. And so they're not all in the same star system. So like Ditalix A, Ditalix is not the name of the star system. It's the name of the company so it's the fifth of six.
Those are really short miniskirts that the ensigns have to wear. That girl just walked by and I'm like, why would you on a spaceship? Why would your skirts be that high? Yeah.
So when he talks here at Point of Science about how there's a day and a night side. So this planet is close enough to the star that is called what we call tidally locked. So the way the moon is around the Earth, so the moon is tidally locked to the Earth, meaning that the rotation period of the moon is exactly the same as its revolution period around us, meaning the same face of the moon is always facing us, no matter where it is in its orbit. As it goes around, the same side of the moon always faces the Earth. And eventually every planet theoretically does that if it is, if it's goes around a star or a moon going around a planet long enough, it'll tidally lock. Mercury is not tidally locked, but it has a very, very slow rotation because of the same effect. And eventually Mercury will be like this planet Ditalix B, where there's just one side facing the sun all the time and one side facing away. And if there's no atmosphere, then the side facing the sun is, you know, thousands of degrees, and the side facing away is minus a couple hundred degrees.
So is that a plus or a minus for scientific veracity there?
Well, so the problem is they talk about, okay, well, you know, all the mining operations take place on this little edge between the day side and the night side. And I guess theoretically, maybe, depending on how big the planet was, there might be a zone, but probably not, honestly, because either you're in the sun or you're not in the sun. Like, this is true even on the moon. Like, there are permafrost craters on the moon where the sun could be shining right next to it and it's still frozen because it's in the shadow of a crater. And right. And so you can't – it's not really – either you're in the sun or you're not in the sun unless there's an atmosphere. And there can't – well, so now here we get to point of science, C or D here, which is that he beams down and he's just kind of standing there. And we do see some clouds floating by in the background, which implies that there's an atmosphere on this planet. But if one side of the planet is tidally locked towards the sun, the atmosphere is just going to boil away like within a matter right. of – so there's no way that there could be an atmosphere on this planet. So that's just unrealistic.
I did want to just throw out a quick note here. In the opening credits, they mentioned some guest stars, but unfortunately, Michael Berryman does not get a mention until the end credits.
Huh. And yeah,
another piece of horror DNA is that this gentleman right here is infamous for starring in famous. He stars in lots of horror movies. Probably best known for the original Hills Have Eyes from 1977. Yep.
He was in my buddy's movie called now I'm drawing a blank.
Look it up.
Western. Yeah, hold on, I'll look it up.
You don't want to screw that. He's also in Weird Science. I mean, he's an odd looking guy, but he's also a good actor.
Yeah, it was
so
Red.
You could see why he'd be good in genre stuff.
It was. It ended up being called Red on Yella, Killa Fella. Which is a bit of a mouthful. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah. That was his working title. It ended up being called Kill or Be Killed. That's why I couldn't quite remember it.
Okay.
And that was Dwayne Graves and Justin Meeks. Justin was the owner of the cabin that we shot Found Footage 3D.
Right. And, okay, there's our connection.
Yeah, and they made Wild Man of the Navidad and Butcher Boys, which Kim Henkel produced both of.
And that is our buddy Kim Henkel, who wrote Texas Chainsaw.
There is an interesting choice here not to put Michael Berryman in some sort of alien makeup.
Yeah, he looks a little bit exotic. He's got this like line up and down his face, and he's wearing a lot of makeup in the back of his head. But yeah, he's I'm an odd looking guy too, so I'm not knocking him. I don't mean it in a bad way.
You missed my joke.
Oh, what?
They didn't put him in alien makeup.
Right.
He's got a very unique look, which is
this part of the episode to me is interesting because it leads into this whole idea of obviously anybody who watches Star Trek or Next Generation a lot will be able to pull out political and social subtext in almost every single episode. And this seems particularly timely right now because we're dealing with stuff in politics where we're not entirely sure who we can trust.
Yeah.
If somebody says, something is definitely happening next month, we're like, well, I trust that person. And then 2 months later, you're like, oh, how did I trust that politician or that media person? So I was kind of like, this kind of got under my skin a little bit here because you can't tell who's lying and who's telling the truth, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so weirdly enough, I watched the entire run again once 3 or 4 years ago. Like whenever it first went up on Netflix, I watched the whole thing all the way through again. And I think that might have been the only other time I've seen this. I probably saw it on reruns various times, but I didn't, my recollection was that these guys turned out to be the conspirators. But that's not – spoiler alert, that's not what ends up happening. Except
no,
for her.
And I think that's kind
– she's part of the conspiracy.
I think that – that's kind of the smart writing of it is that, they want you to suspect this guy right here right off the bat.
Right.
And there's no reason to, but he's the most malevolent right at this point. So it's just – it's good writing. And I think part of the idea here – and I can't remember if they ever come back to these creatures in future episodes, but I
– No, they don't.
It feels like part of the marching orders were, let's introduce a threat that might come back in season 4.
Yeah,
or
it is. It is weird that maybe that was just part of the horror-y episode of it that like they wanted to end on this sort of cliffhanger sequel tease that a lot of horror movies end on.
But then that leads to the next question of maybe they weren't going for that table setting. Maybe the point was just to say, be careful who you trust in the Federation. Period.
Yeah.
No,
well, it is interesting that in 7 seasons or whatever, they never managed to find their way back to this. But then again, maybe they tried. I wouldn't be surprised if they had, discussed various possible ways to do it. And, there's only it's hard to imagine a way that isn't just a repeat of this episode. You know what I mean? Like, just given the way these creatures are. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, but you know what? If you and I were in the writer's room for season 7, we'd be like, tell them. excuse me, Mr. Berman, Steven and I would like to revisit season one, episode 24 or whatever, and see if we can't do something with those creatures again. You know, like
what I'm saying, I imagine somebody probably did from numerous times over the years, yeah. And they just never found a way to do it that they were happy
right.
with. Because Lord knows they were, you know, they're, you know, as with any TV show, I'm sure there are points where they're like, okay, what can we possibly do that we haven't done before? What, like, you know, where they ran, like, you have to do 24 or 25 episodes per season. You have to come up with
seriously.
24, 25,
I mean, that's,
somewhat unique sci-fi concepts.
That's like 12 movies in
it's
less
ridiculous.
Than a year.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
like, yeah.
And so remember that next time you're watching an hour-long show that has 20-some episodes every season, and maybe the production design is not top-notch, or one of the performances isn't great, or some of the special effects are a little sketchy. It's because those people are essentially making 12 and a half movies in the course of 8 months or 10 months. Like, that's what this kind of season is.
Yeah, I know.
And
they have a week to shoot this stuff, and, you know, they had to build that set that we were just on. You know, obviously this set already exists, but, you know, they have anytime they go to a new planet or...
Boy, does she change looks as the seasons go on. Good Lord.
So this scene feels like it only exists because, like, the last thing that the guy tells him is, like, don't even tell any of your senior officers. And then we cut immediately to a scene where he's talking to Troy about it and, you know...
Right, of course that's who he would tell because it's about, like, issues of the mind and memory and
trust.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like, this scene feels like it kind of exists because he has to get some thoughts out, you know, so that the audience knows what he's thinking about all of this stuff. And
no,
the way to
no,
do that is
because
to,
if they wanted that, he would just do Stardate supplemental.
Yeah, they do that a little bit later on, but it's difficult. There's some nuance in that discussion that I think works a lot better as a back and forth between them.
And it also is a good character beat because he says to these three people, I will not tell anyone. And then he's immediately telling Troy.
Yeah.
And the audience knows, oh, of course, he trusts her
right.
implicitly.
Troy's
of course
not.
He's going to tell her.
Right.
But yeah, it's amazing. Like, look at her in season right now and then picture what she looks like in like season six. It is a completely different character.
Yeah. So there's this small subplot going on here with Data about
always a B story. Yeah.
Him trying to, well, it's, you know, it doesn't come back around in here. This feels like it's not really even a B story. This feels like Serial. Story, you know what I mean? Like, this is like,
yeah,
okay, we're arcing Data over the course of many seasons to go from being this just straight up robot to being more human. And this is,
yeah.
the, you know, there's a little bit of sort of maintenance in that very long term storyline in this episode. In the beginning, when he tells a joke, and then later on here in a scene or two where he starts talking to himself as he's looking at the computer, and the computer's all confused.
Yeah, you could see them, like, you know, charting out the next three seasons and going, all right, by this point, we want him to discover humor. And now by this point, we want him to discover romance. And by this point, we want him to discover sacrifice. And they probably had like all these little signposts in, you know, where they wanted Data to advance. Because I think one of the most interesting things about the show, and I'm not necessarily a huge Data fan, frankly, I don't dislike him, but I could take him or leave him. But he's a fan favorite, and they really do a good job of evolving him throughout the course of the series.
Yeah.
More so than some of the human characters.
Especially as you start going into some of the movies.
Yeah.
No, I like Data. I like the way Data arcs. Whereas Worf, I've never super all that much cared for. He also looks really weird in these early episodes too, because he's got the short hair, and he just kind of, it looks like his head is just gigantic. I met him. I met Michael Dorn at a convention once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? You met Dorn? What's he like?
Whatever. He was nice. He shook my hand. I was 12, 13. It was, you know, my brother took me to a convention, and we met him, and he has a very deep voice.
I have never met any of these people.
He's the only one I've
travels.
Ever met.
Yeah. I would love to meet Patrick Stewart. I would be just like taking royalty or something.
Yeah, I did... Can I tell – nah, you know what? I'm not going to tell this story publicly. But I did it when we were at the premiere of Found Footage 3D, which was part of WizardCon. Bill Shatner was there, and I ran into him just in the hallway, just passed by him. And he was dressed as Captain Kirk, and I thought he was a Captain Kirk cosplayer. And then later that night, I'm hanging out with our crew member Cassidy who had come to the festival with us, and she's like, no, that was him. She, like, she apparently, you know, is friendly with him from various conventions and stuff. And she stopped and talked to him for a couple minutes. And she's like, no, that was definitely him. And I was like, that's so, cause he had no entourage. He had no, he just kind of looked like a kind of old version of Captain Kirk.
You know how old Shatner is right now?
He's like 80 or something, isn't he?
He's 85.
Yeah.
God bless him.
He looked great for 85.
He looks old, but he doesn't travel like he's 85. That man gets around.
But I just remember seeing him, and I was just like, wow, that dude definitely should be cosplaying as Captain Kirk because he looks like old Bill Shatner. And then I watched,
there's some goofy show on Hulu in which Shatner and Henry Winkler, George Foreman, and Terry Bradshaw
weird
go on like an international trip. And I love Henry Winkler. I absolutely love Henry Winkler. He cracks me up. So it was not a bad show. It was exactly what I described it as. Four old celebrities going on an international trip. I watched half of the first episode, thought it was charming. I told my mom about it, and she's watched the entire series already.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the scene I was talking about.
Better late than never. That's what it's called. Mm. But yeah, I don't love Shatner. I love Patrick Stewart.
I'm excited about the new series.
Absolutely.
He is
79 at the time of this recording, the gent, Patrick Stewart.
Is he really?
Yep.
I thought he was older
than that.
Born
in 1940.
I thought he was about the same age as McKellen, but I guess he was a little bit younger. Because McKellen's in his 80s, isn't he?
And you know, it's a testament to Patrick Stewart's demeanor and stature as an actor. This show asks him to do some silly stuff on occasion. Look silly, run silly, wear silly shit. And he is never beneath it or below it or better than. He is 100% game for this, you know, mostly awesome but occasionally goofy sci-fi adventure. Yeah. And he buys into everything. So even when an episode might be a little silly, you buy it because Patrick Stewart is just that good.
Well, and apparently they didn't want it. I can't remember now all of the details. You can go look it up online. But either Roddenberry didn't want him, I think, because he was bald, and so they told him to come in wearing a wig, and he was just like, nah. And then they ended up giving him the job anyway. They wanted somebody younger, or maybe it was the other way around. Roddenberry was championing him as being the opposite of Kirk in a lot of ways, and the network just wanted another Kirk. I think that might be it. I don't remember the details, but one way or the other, there were people that were not interested in the idea of Patrick Stewart, who, let's be honest, he looks like he's 60.
Yep.
I don't
I bet you a casting director would say, hey, that's the beauty of it, is that he looks 60. He's actually only 40. He can do a lot of physical stuff, but he still gives across this wise authority figure of many years, even though he isn't that old.
Yeah.
He kind of gives that vibe off.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, and then he's got the theater background and the gravitas.
Yeah,
and the formal training and the very Britishness of it, you know. It's funny because
you talk to British actors. Movies that you've seen him in, name a movie you saw Patrick Stewart in before Next Generation.
Oh, I don't think I had any idea who he was before Next Generation.
Oh, well, gosh, I can help. He is in Dune.
He's Gurney Halleck in Dune.
Yep. Excalibur. He's in Steve Martin's L.A. Story. He has a quick moment in Toby Hooper's Insane in the Membrane, Life Force. He's in a really underrated period thriller called Doctor and the Devils that Mel Brooks produced. What else? Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
That was post this.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. But yeah, he's just what I didn't know him by name until well after Next Generation. But then occasionally you'd see him pop up in L.A. Story or Life Force, and you're like, holy shit, that's Patrick Stewart.
I just love that at almost 80 years old, he's still willing to take kind of insane risks, like being in Green Room, playing a Nazi skinhead in Green Room, with the same sense of gravitas, you know, but evil, and you buy it completely.
Yeah. And I bet you that, you know, he probably relished not only getting offered that role, but, you know, getting to do it because, I mean, the guy is a Shakespearean-trained actor, did a lot of work before becoming iconic.
Okay, so this guy comes in and whispers in the ear. I love this moment right here. Sorry, I just want to point out this moment.
Yep, the Niles Crane.
Right. And then he goes, what? And he turns it off, and then Picard turns around and he says,
Scientology.
Frey,
Riker.
Yeah, they seem normal enough. Like, what about that seemed normal to you? They seemed like weird and stilted, and then a guy came in and whispered in their ear, and they cut off communication. Nothing about that seemed
look
normal.
Look how Riker is standing here. What is that?
Hey,
what is Riker doing with his hips here?
At least he doesn't have his leg over the chair, which is his
he just has some like,
normal way of standing.
Yeah, Frakes, it takes some aggressively casual poses in this show.
So one of the things that somebody pointed out to me that I can never unsee now is that when he walks, he leads with his head. Like he looks like he's about to like headbutt into the wall. And once you see it, like, you realize that he, like, leaning forward, and it looks like if he didn't get his next foot out in front of him in time, he's just going to fall over. And
who, Frakes?
Yeah. Once you see it, like, it's impossible not to.
I kind of – he's one of my favorite characters because he goes – there are some episodes where he's just, like Republican senator stupid. There's just like a dumb dummy with full of bad advice and bad ideas. And then in other episodes, he can be quiet hero.
Yeah.
He can be support for somebody else. There's a real gamut for Riker. He goes from really heroic to really silly, and Frakes is really fun.
He see, look at him, look at the way he walks. Look at his head. He's like his head is forward.
Yeah.
And the one shoulder, he like looks like he's like about to try to like block.
Well, I mean,
somebody,
if you had to walk like that, if you had to wear that jumpsuit with your arms just dangling at your side, like you're.
Yeah, apparently these jumpsuits were rank. Like they basically couldn't watch them, and you know they're under these hot lights, and they're all you know.
Oh no, these
else.
Costumes look like you wear them for like two shoots, and then
oh no,
burn
but
them.
Except they didn't. They didn't have the budget to be able to do that, so they had to wear them over and over and over again, and they just got like disgusting. Like there's interviews with the cast members where they talk about how notorious these things were. So Frakes went on to become a director of various things, including a bunch of Star Trek episodes, but most recently he directed a couple of episodes on The Orville, which is a series that I think we're going to get to, although you haven't watched
it. What did
it
I
yet.
Tell you about The Orville, Stephen?
That it's basically the next generation with occasional dick jokes.
No, that's well, I have a mild, not hate, I'm not a hater. I have a mild dislike. I think Seth MacFarlane is kind of one note. Talented, definitely talented, but still kind of one note.
The Orville really surprised me. So Randy made
and,
me watch
yeah, so
it.
I'm glad to watch it when we get to it, but that's where I'm at right now is that I'm a little skeptical.
I was expecting it to be just, you know, the Family Guy version of Star Trek. And it's way more serious and way more sort of faithful to the sort of genre of the space sci-fi adventure.
Right,
kind of
but
thing.
Even but when you even when you say that, my logic, my brain goes to, so what you're saying is I'm supposed to accept Seth MacFarlane as a sincere character?
Oh, yeah.
And I have trouble doing that.
No,
it
works. It works, surprisingly. It's not, like, great, but we've enjoyed it so far. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's Bannon Braga who, you know, who did this and I think—
Did this, right.
And several of the later Star Trek series. And apparently, I guess they had pitched it as a Star Trek series and then—
There's a chance we start watching like the pilot of Orville and then I go nuts and go, I was wrong, I loved it. It's very possible. It happens to me all the time.
It was just not,
I thought,
I'm just
believe
saying
it or not, again, I'm hot and cold on MacFarlane, yet I kind of liked his Western movie. I thought it was way too long, but definitely had some funny shit in it.
I haven't seen it, but yeah.
I think it's pushing 2 hours. If that movie was 88 minutes, I think I'd like it, like legitimately be able to recommend it.
So I didn't notice this when I was watching this yesterday and preparing, but the whole point of – oh, I guess because he's – never mind. The whole – never mind. So I guess the Picard thinks that this admiral is only coming up to the ship to warn them about this conspiracy. And then he never says anything to them about it, the conspiracy or whatever. And then somehow or other, in the course of that conversation, Picard realizes that it's not actually him, that it's somebody.
Right, and I like this because Picard makes a mistake.
That stuff in the background is just soundproofing.
Yeah.
It's just like the phone that you put up in recording.
This is like, they don't even make a major deal, but a major plot point in this episode is that Picard gets it wrong. And then has to fix his mistake because he says that guy's fine and he's not.
No, he doesn't. Picard says he says it's not him. That's what he's saying right now. He says it's not him.
But it is him.
No, it's not him. Picard
Dude,
is right.
This guy beats the hell out of Worf in a couple of scenes.
I understand that. And Picard is saying that that's not my friend the Admiral. That's something has taken over his body. And he's right.
But then why just let him walk free?
He doesn't. He tells Riker to keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on him the whole time, which is how Riker ends up getting the crap
beat. Get his ass beat.
Live long and prosper.
We can talk about it when we get there, but the physiology of the creature and what it does to its host does not make any sense.
None of it makes any sense at all. None of it. Like how it gets inside them, like crawling through the mouth, and then how the hell does it get around to the back of the neck? Like it's clearly able to like interface with our brain waves or whatever, like and control people. So it's some sort of like symbiote or parasite, but like how would this thing have even evolved? Like how does it like – how could it possibly have evolved in a place where like, oh, well, then when these creatures happen to show up that have never set foot on this planet before and we know how to take them over as hosts, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense biologically speaking.
Can you think of any other movies? I can, but I'm going to throw it to you. Can you think of any other movies or TV shows that do the old the monsters that control you from the inside and people can't tell it's you?
I mean, envision the body snatchers to some extent. Although they create new versions as opposed to control. Isn't there like the Puppet Masters,
The Puppet Sutherland Masters. Movie? Yeah. The one on the based on the Heinlein. And of course there's Jack Shoulders, The Hidden from 1987, in which there's.
So he doesn't have the thing on the back of his neck right now. The gills that they're supposedly – you can totally tell like they cut. All right, so here – there's the actor and cut. There's the stuntman and there's the actor and
– Yeah, there's no way to do that.
There's the stuntman.
When you're shooting like, you know, 3 episodes in 2 weeks, you know, like you don't have much time to block all this stuff.
No, I mean like, they probably did this on the day. They had to shoot this entire – they had like 2 hours.
Riker's punch looks like a – you know – he's jumping over.
This kick. It's just like nobody kicks like
weird.
That.
That's a kick out of Naked Gun. That is a Frank Drebin kick right there. I'm sorry, Will. Riker.
And then like the
Commander Riker.
And then like the 20-year-old dude with the white wig.
That second roundhouse he did was a Frank Drebin kick. Where did that leg come from? But again, you know.
Matte paintings there, which looked great for their time.
That's the beautiful thing about like dated sci-fi is that nobody on this podcast or anybody that I would respect would talk shit about Next Generation, but like you could still look at like, you know, sloppy fight choreography or questionable special effects or production design.
Yeah.
And it's all out of love. It's all out of love. There's we're not deriding or insulting these.
You gotta roll people with it. I mean, that's part of its sort of hammy charm. You know, even the Next Generation, which it dialed down that sort of hammy fight stuff considerably from
is
the
that
original.
Is that a Starfleet Command tour poster?
No, it's the festival poster. Those are all the bands that are playing at the Starfleet.
Right, that's what I meant. The tour poster. Yeah. All right. So, Steven, let me ask you this: what of all the things that have Star Trek attached to the name, what's your favorite?
I mean, of all the series, The Next Generation. Although, to be honest, I haven't really extensively watched. I've never seen I've seen individual episodes of Voyager and DS9, but I never actually watched the whole series.
Never saw Voyager. Saw about 2/3 of Deep Space Nine. Definite fan, but it never really glued, stuck to my ribs like TNG.
There are aspects of Enterprise that I liked a lot.
That was the Bacula one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bacula being one of those aspects.
Yeah, I like him, but I would watch Voyager first because I'd want to go in order.
His doors made out of styrofoam.
Balsa wood. And he took a hard fall, that guy.
That stunt guy. Yeah, he did. The stunt guy wearing Geordi's mask.
The Klingons that – I don't get it. Klingons, you should be leaping across the room by now.
No, what's he's all just this? Getting ready to like fight, man. Look at the makeup line on his neck, though.
when we come back from commercial and he breaks out the most questionable fighting tactic I've ever seen. I don't get the bald fit.
The guy doesn't look anything like the actor.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And like, I don't know, maybe it's because it's HD and like, I don't know. It's just so funny that you could get away with this back then. Nowadays, they do like a face replacement or whatever, you know?
I love Who's the Hero? The Doc.
Beverly Crusher. Crusher.
Love Crusher. She's probably my third or fourth favorite character.
So I had a weird, like, from, you know, because I watched it again in real time when it was, when, you know, we watched the pilot when it aired and we watched every episode every week. And then she left, she leaves at the end of this season. Beverly Crusher does. Gates McFadden left the show. And then there was a season where they had Dr. Pulaski. And in my memory, like, she was gone for like multiple seasons and only came back towards the end. But she, no, she's only gone for the second season. And then I guess Pulaski, like, all the fans hated her. And so they brought back Crusher. But rewatching them all, like, I like the dynamic between Pulaski and Picard in season two. Getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Who plays Pulaski? I don't remember.
It's Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. Her name is...
Oh, Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
Love Jane Seymour.
Oh, wait. Is that right?
You tell me, man.
She's on... I don't know. I'll have to look that up. We're going to sound like idiots to all of the...
Because we didn't... that's a nice shot right there. But because we didn't know the name of this season two doctor right off the top of our head. It's fine. I also think Crusher is beautiful at this stage and in later seasons. I love her hair and her eyes. I love her voice. I have a huge crush on her in addition to her being one of the only like warm characters on the show. And I like that.
Catherine Pulaski. Portrayed by Diana Muldaur.
Muldaur, okay, yeah.
What was she on?
It's not Jane Seymour. Tell me that guy doesn't look like Niles Crane in Starfleet uniform. No.
She was on L.A. Law. Why did I think she was on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
Maybe they were going to bring her back anyway, and they just needed a replacement for a season.
No, they didn't. Like she left because she wanted to like pursue other opportunities or something. And then I guess the other opportunities didn't work out, so she came back.
I love her name. Her name is Gates. That's her first name. That's...
Yeah.
Just a cool name.
Huh.
Oh.
Man, I don't know. I don't know why it is I associated her with, for the life of me, I'm trying to figure it out. She was on L.A. Law.
What, Stephen, what is the finest Star Trek motion picture?
I mean, The Wrath of Khan, obviously. There isn't any argument. There aren't any other serious contenders. There are other good movies, but, like, the best one is...
And eventually on Science vs. Fiction regular podcast, we might have to do some of the Next Generation movies because
I like Generations.
I don't remember. I saw every one of them. I even saw like what was it, Insurrection, which was like a glorified episode.
Yeah.
with better effects.
Yeah, directed by Jonathan Frakes.
I thought First Contact, Generations was the first one, and I thought that was all right. I remember liking it.
I like Generations a lot. Malcolm McDowell,
And then First Contact, which is damn good.
Everybody always loves First Contact, but it's definitely not my favorite of the. Of the Next Generation movies. I don't know.
Which one's better?
I mean, I like Generations better.
Nemesis?
No, Nemesis is not very good. I rewatched that recently, too.
That's the last one they did, right?
Tom Hardy plays young Captain Picard.
Niles.
But, no, that movie didn't turn out very good.
Right, well, there's only four, right? Or five?
There's one. Yeah, I think so.
Generations, First Contact... Nemesis was the last one. Insurrection was the okay. I like those lighting fixtures. Those are pretty cool. I could see the production designers just walking through any furniture store and being like, anything that looks futuristic, like that triangle chair in the back, that looks futuristic. Those that floor lamp right behind him, that looks futuristic.
All those cups, you know, like none of this, very little of this stuff, I'm sure was bespoke. A lot of it was just like they found in like old antique shops or like those little aperitif.
That guy looks like Mike Pence. That's who he looks like, Mike Pence.
Okay, who's the random yellow shirt that just suddenly?
Who's the David Schwimmer? It looks like Ross Geller of Federation.
So now, interesting fun fact here, what they're eating there are called mealworms. Well, I don't know what they're actually eating in these shots. They're clearly not eating the mealworms. But, in the close-ups where you see them wriggling around, those are mealworms. And
I bet they're eating lo mein, chopped up real small.
So those mealworms, I found this out recently because I had this thing in a script for an upcoming movie.
Look at them. Look how subtle.
No, using maggots.
Yeah.
And I was told by our makeup effects people that if you have maggots, then you have to have an animal wrangler if you're SAG to make sure that the maggots are okay. But you can use mealworms without an animal wrangler because mealworms you can buy at a pet store as food, and technically you can eat them, and so they count as food and not as animals, and therefore you don't have to have the SPCA or whatever, like, making sure that you don't hurt them.
So baby flies have...
It's just a weird, rights. Like, yeah.
Baby flies have rights, mealworms don't.
Apparently, according to the SPCA and SAG.
And I don't think that this race would be able to fall for the old fake appendage.
Yeah, you'd think that they, especially Niles.
Like, okay, imagine Niles this. Imagine this. He's an alien walks up to you and shows us a glued on penis and says, "Look, I'm human." We'd be like, yeah, no, you're not.
Know. Yeah, we wouldn't even know. Like, we wouldn't even know what the things are that they'd be looking for that would make it obviously fake.
Right. Right.
But again, they also have to be able to, like, have some sort of sense of each other, because, like, there's, you know, at the end of the episode, there's the big one that lives inside Niles. And, you know, it's apparently was controlling and communicating with all the other ones. So it would know that there wasn't actually one inside Riker. But it's still, I mean, from a narrative point of view, it's a cool little twist here. Because, you know, I remember, you know, whatever, at 12 or whatever, I didn't see it coming.
No, it's a good misdirect. If I, you know, wasn't a guy who watches movies and TV shows nonstop every day for my profession, I might even have temporarily fallen for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you watch that and you're like, all right, they're tricking them. Because if Riker was actually possessed, we would have seen that moment.
It reminds me of this scene from Lost Boys.
Oh, when they're trying to enlist him?
When he's like, you know, you're eating worms, Michael. And he looks down and it's the same thing as in the mealworms instead of noodles.
All in the same shot. Oh, and then he pulls back. I ain't eating worms.
And then he kills the red shirt, except he's wearing a yellow shirt. So,
well, when there's not a red shirt, you just choose the least common color. Good effect.
I love the handmade feel of those things. The stop motion.
Oh yeah, there's a little stop motion with the creature coming up in a minute that I loved. But no, I mean the shot of, like, okay, here's what happens. You open your mouth while we pull the string and pull it out from under your mouth.
No, that's
and,
stop motion right there. That was stop motion.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
But if you look carefully, it doesn't really clear the side of her lip. Oh, they got him right in the butt.
No, they nailed him in the kidneys.
The last shot, it was like right on both cheeks. Right, look.
Yeah, see, that's stop motion right there.
Yeah. That.
Yep.
Run! Beeping. Stomp it! What are you doing?
I remember being so scared by all this when I was a kid. And this all
creepy.
It's weird because I'm rewatching this now. Like, I remember this feeling bumper like it was a really dark.
They bought that from a bumper car lot and turned it into a chair. Well, I think Steve, and this might speak to what you're talking about, is up till this point, it's mostly been character and science-based sci-fi adventures. And this one gets dark.
Yeah. Physically dark. Like, I remember this season being – or this scene taking
like
place
letting
in a dark
it happen.
Environment. Yeah.
Picard's letting it happen.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Because he wants to see what's going on.
Oh, Niles.
So, again, how does this thing then get – to the back of his neck? How is it not just a giant lump? Given the size of that thing, how is it not just a giant lump on the back of his neck? They say that the tail thing that sticks out of the back of the neck is some sort of gill so it can breathe, but how is it breathing right now? It's inside of him, and its little gill thing is not sticking out anywhere. So, and then why does it make his neck bulge? Like, none of this really makes a whole lot of sense if you stop and think about it, but it's pretty cool. The bladder effects, which were, you know, still...
It is. It's all cool. And it just, you know, it speaks to the whole... we could just have it go in his mouth and now he's possessed. But they wanted to, you know, bring in some exotic kind of biology to it to make it creepy.
Now this part, I had forgotten about this until I rewatched it. Like, how intense that is. They showed that on network television is kind of crazy. Apparently, according to one of our Twitter followers, they censored that for British television. I mean, probably even this part too, because it's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, and it really
television.
Kind of... Like, I think it's
none
like,
of this.
Yeah, that's
this doesn't make
shit.
Any sense. How is that thing
in his belly?
Of him? How is it moving him around? Like, it's like he has no internal organs anymore.
His
like,
head's gone right there.
Yeah.
Ow.
It's a puppet effect, obviously.
Yeah, I think that at this point in the first season, that's an interesting shot right there.
How are they gonna explain all that to people? Like, yeah, we killed three high-ranking admirals of Starfleet because we thought they were infested by these. I mean, I guess they still have.
evident.
Maybe that's the whole point of that shot, was to show all the little things that were laying around, yeah, because they killed, you know, they disintegrated the big one.
So, yeah, like, this guy had one of those in him, and she's like, sure, he'll be fine. I'm like, not,
how do you know
not
that?
Based on what I just saw.
Like, how do you know that? Where, how did they get the thing out of him? Like, did they have to cut open the back of his neck?
Maybe they put some food in his mouth and it just came out. But, you know, I do like the whole subtext of you don't know who you can trust. It you know, it goes back to Body Snatchers and even further than that, The Thing, who goes there. You know,
so here's this last little beat here where he's like, it was a beacon. I don't know how he knows it was a beacon. Like,
because he's a robot.
Homing beacon.
A robot would know a homing beacon when he sees one.
But we don't know how far away these things live. So maybe they just, you know, there wasn't enough time passed for them to come back. So again, here we have this parallax of the stars, and that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Know. Yeah. The ones there, stars moving left and right.
Yeah. Oh, are there really? No, I don't think there are. There's a common. It's hard to tell because sometimes the things look like they're moving right because things near them are moving left. I love the theme. The theme song.
Oh, I love the music. I mean, not just the theme, but I love the incidental and just episode music, you know, like that plays throughout.
This theme was like, I can't remember exactly, but like it appears in the Star Trek The Motion Picture because it was used as a minor theme in there. And then he wrote something for The Next Generation and they didn't like it. And so they just pulled something from the Star Trek movie.
Well, it was Jerry Goldsmith was not ashamed of recycling his own stuff.
Yeah.
Well beyond Star Trek. But I want to thank everybody who tuned in. If you're listening to this, that means you support Weinberg Plus, which is where you'll find a lot of my weekly film reviews. I'm going to Fantastic Fest next week, so I'll have some more reviews then. You'll find all the Fireflies. What else did I do? Every Godzilla film ever made, reviewed. So thank you for supporting us on Patreon. And thank you, Stephen. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was good to revisit this.
Yep. We'll definitely be doing some more TNG, definitely be doing some more Firefly. And in the future, I think we're going to be traveling to The Expanse as well.
And if you have suggestions, find us on Twitter and let us know what your favorite TV episodes
Scott E.
are.
Weinberg and Stephen DeGennaro, spelled DeGennaro, but it's actually pronounced DeGennaro. And let us know what you'd like to see done on either Science versus Fiction or on a bonus episode, and we'll definitely throw it in the hat. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.